It's Tuesday and time to read from your comments. Last week, we talked about what has changed in the coal industry since the natural gas boom. We spoke with an analyst and with the president of the Kentucky Coal Association. Lisa Hoyos wrote us on Facebook to say, "I'm unpleasantly surprised you didn't have anyone on the show talking about the social movements in this country trying to stop coal exports. Coal is the chief contributor to global warming, devastating peoples and ecosystems all over the world. We're close to climate tipping points. Our government needs to help Kentucky and other coal producers build a renewable energy infrastructure." Aaron in Louisville wrote, "My father was a coal miner. His father was a coal miner. Most people who mine coal do so because it pays a much higher wage than any other job in a region that was built, for better or worse, by coal companies for the purpose of mining coal. If coal goes away, so will the livelihoods of these communities. While coal isn't an ideal power source and its environmental impact is significant, a solution needs to be reached that allows the people in coal country to provide for their families." We also talked to Professor Dominique Brossard about how negative comments online can affect our interpretation of news stories. Devin, a freelancer in San Francisco, told us, "I recently wrote an article for a local news site that received several negative comments, and I was surprised to find myself thrilled. I know some other young writers who have had similar experiences. In today's media landscape, it feels you haven't made it until people are hating on you." Last week, the election of Jorge Mario Bergoglio as the new pope preempted our political junkie segment. Anita Manga from Berkeley, California, felt betrayed. She emailed us, "You kick Ken Rudinoff for a puff of white smoke? A2 talk of the nation?" Rest easy, Anita. Ken will be back tomorrow. And about a dozen of you wrote in with a correction last week when the editor-at-large at Merriam-Webster, Peter Sokolowski, came on to talk about vocabulary events. A caller mentioned the word bellwether, which Peter said had to do with the practice of leading a flock of sheep. Joan Kelly in Eugene, Oregon, wrote to clarify, "While that is in the neighborhood of being correct, the term is actually derived from the Middle English bellwether and refers to the practice of placing a bell around the neck of a castrated ram, a wether, leading his flock of sheep. The movements of the flock could be noted by hearing the bell before the flock was in sight. Hence, the bellwether is an indicator of where things are going." If you have a correction, comments, or questions for us, the best way to reach us is by email. Our address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help in how to pronounce your name. You can also find us on Facebook, and if you're on Twitter, you can follow us there at TOTN. Talk of the Nation is produced by Laura Lee, Libby Franklin, Jessica Reedy, Natalie Winston, Tinbeat Ermias, and Priska Neely. Priska also handles our web content. A.D. Quigg is our intern. Our editor is Sarah Handel. Gwen Uten is our director. Nathan Bark, our technical director. He gets engineering help from Cal Southworth, Tom Marquito, and Elizabeth Ackley. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Scott Cameron is our senior producer. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer. Tomorrow, Ohio's Attorney General calls a grand jury to determine who else might be accountable after the rape of a high school student. We'll talk about that in this hour tomorrow. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington.